episode of Diaspora United. I am Andre Carlisle here with Courtney Stiff. Courtney, how are you?
Not so bad. It is a very rainy day where I am, and I really need the sun to come back.
Yeah, it's been raining here a lot too. And actually, to be honest, I shouldn't complain because it's not like it's rained a lot recently. It's just that I'm mad that it's raining now. But when I think back, like, we've had like a lot of days without it, and I'm kind of like, all right, I guess you can rain a little bit. Fine.
Yeah.
If you have to.
I just don't like the rain. At this point, I'm like, it's April. I know it's rain, but also it's like, since we don't get snow anymore, we now just get tons and tons of rain.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Well, I'd rather have snow. I'd rather have snow than rain. At least.
Oh, absolutely not.
At least when it's snowing, you can like go outside, go for a walk. Like you don't have to bring an umbrella. Like everything gets covered in like nice and snowy.
But. I learned some things about astrology. I'm not an astrology person, all right? You're making a weird face right now.
Astronomy?
I learned some things. I am apparently a water sign, and what that means is I like water, okay? And what I'm saying is rain is my, like, I like rain because the sound of rain is pleasing to me. Like, it does something. It feels, like, I don't like looking at it, but the sound of it, I like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the sound of rain is great. It's just, when you have to go into work... It's like, I've taken, honestly, snow over rain. At least I can do things. And I thought you were talking about astronomy because I thought you were about to tell me some facts about rain falling. So when you said astrology, I was like deeply confused. I was like, do you mean another science? Like weather science?
This is what happens sometimes with the podcast. But we are going to get back into the normal flow. But first, we read a review and ask y'all to review. And I'm just going to go ahead and acknowledge the situation. There's some nonsense that we experience. So some people have taken it upon themselves to drop in negative reviews because they're mad about certain things that we have said and advocated for. Or I won't even say we, I'll say me. I've been saying most of the things. So if y'all want to counter that bullshit, please do. 5-star ratings, drop a review in there. Thank you very much.
I will say I feel confident in calling them a moron. One of the morons did leave us 5 stars, but then left a negative comment in the review, which honestly was really funny to me, because I was like, technically, you did us a favor, because you kept the 5 stars going up.
I think they were trying to like cheat the system somehow, like they're just gonna delete the 1-star one, so I'll get mine and make it seem like it. So they like galaxy brain themselves, and it's
they
like,
did.
Well, thanks for the 5-star rating.
I was like, thanks for the 5 stars. Yeah. But yeah, there's some absolute nonsense in our comments, in our DM. Well, actually, I luckily haven't really gotten a DM, but that's because we've been very quick with the block button. And also now there are people from the Salt Lake City Tribune, I believe that's their newspaper, also advocating for the same things that we have been talking about, that Andre has been writing about. Mm-hmm. So,
imagine.
And also, there have been other podcasters and media people saying that we were just the ones who got attacked because we're black. Let's be real.
Yeah, let's be real about the situation. What happened. And you know, it's not unexpected, but it did happen. So if y'all want to help out, please do. Drop us a 5-star rating. Even if you've reviewed before or rated before, I don't know, grab your mama's phone. Go to our spot on podcast and drop that review. It's fine. And we'll appreciate it. Going to read this one from Margaret K.L. What you need is this podcast is the title of this review. Do you wish you had a Voso group chat? Do you tire out your friends with cool Voso facts while they try to listen patiently? Did you find yourself telling your coworkers about Puerto Rico balling out in the W Gold Cup because you just needed to tell somebody? Hey, Puerto Rico did ball out. Do you enjoy knowing about up-and-coming ballers before everyone else catches on? Do you love learning about tactics? Do you have just a lot of feelings about women's soccer? What you need is this podcast. Join Andre the Hyperbolator. Okay. And Courtney, these stats for the best takes, on-point analysis, and good laughs as they cover the global game. Dad joke time. Why did the Scarecrow win an award? I think we've heard this one before.
Because Someone was standing, right? That's what scarecrows do.
It was outstanding in its field.
Yeah, I was like, there's something with scarecrows and standing. Thank you for the review. Even though I would like to say, I am not Courtney Thestat.
Yes, you are.
You are Andre Thestat because you release a newsletter every single week filled with statistics. You can't call me the Courtney Thestat when you were the one pushing all the statistics.
It's not me. It's just like data visualization stuff from StatsBomb. I'm not doing it.
That's all the stats. Literally all the stats. You're working with a site called StatsBomb.
Yes.
It is Andre Thestat.
Listen.
Also, yes. I talk often in hyperbole. It's like funny.
I was going to say, I'll accept the hyperbole nickname, but I won't accept the stats nickname. I won't. It's yours. You got to take it. You got to hold that.
But you have the newsletter with the stats.
Ain't nobody talking about that right now.
It's really Andre Thestat. All right, now it's Courtney is the Twitter on fire because two of my basketball tweets went viral and I said, oh, God.
Hey, yo. All right,
I'm not an original thought.
I'm not going to say that. I'm going to save it because we got to get to heated and hype. But yeah, I was real hype about that game. But there's also a lot of funny things to talk about in that game. Okay, what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about Corbin Albert. Yeah. Then we're going to talk about She Believes. We're going to kind of look at each team in it, kind of what to look for. This is a very truncated version of She Believes, so it's kind of a quick hitting situation, so don't know how in depth things are really gonna go, but we're gonna talk about it. We haven't talked Europe in a while, so after that we're gonna do a quick wrap up and kind of look around the leagues and the Champions League, and then drop some NWSL observations. We're at the first international break of the season, so there's reason to kind of look back at the first 3 weeks of the NWSL season and take a look see at anything that was interesting, and we might get to heating hype. We'll see, depends on if we've already talked for an hour and a half at that point. We'll see.
Which is completely possible.
It's very, very possible. Courtney, did I miss anything? Do you have anything to add?
Nope.
Okay, so let's get into this Corbin Albert thing. If you haven't heard, she has shared things on her social media accounts, primarily, I believe, TikTok and Instagram. Some from reposts, resharing things that she has seen. Most of them, or at least two of them, have to deal with the LGBTQ community, specifically people who are gay and specifically people who are transgender. And both things, I believe, were from people who claim to be Christians or Christian adjacent people, claiming that these are, of course, wrong. And these are just like things that people have to. It's almost like conversion therapy type of rhetoric, which is extremely harmful. Been debunked a million times. Not that it really even needed scientific debunking, but it has been. But it's almost like framed as these things are things that are just kind of like mental things you have to overcome, and that they're wrong and all of that. And so she shared some of those, and she also liked a post that, really directly calls out Pino and is something like, you know, God taking time off from performing miracles to make sure Megan Rapinoe sprains an ankle in her final game. Obviously, we know what happened to Megan Rapinoe in her final game. It was a lot worse than a sprained ankle. This seems to have been either liked or shared probably before. So, but again, these things were not things that were in her past. I know sometimes when these things happen, or there's some very, you know, what the mainstream media will say, quote unquote, controversial, instead of just saying flat out wrong things that are shared, people will say, well, it happened a few years ago, or this person was really young, or whatever. These things do not go back that far. They go back a number of months. Some just, again, Megan Rapinoe played her last game in what, November? So we're not talking about a long time ago, and some of these posts were also shared in the recent, what, months or even weeks, maybe. So, yeah. She also wears the number 15 for the national team, and because that was a number that Megan Rapinoe quite famously wore, Megan Rapinoe, who also quite famously stands up for the LGBTQ community, is also a gay person herself, also has a wife in Sue Bird. Are they married yet? Are they married?
I think they're still engaged.
Yeah, okay.
That's beside the point.
It is very much beside the point, but it is accurate information. And Pino responded, and I'm just going to read Pino's response. She said, for people who want to hide behind, quote unquote, my beliefs, I would just ask one question. Are you making any type of space safer, more inclusive, more whole, any semblance of better, bringing out the best out of anyone? Because if you aren't, all you believe in is hate. And kids are literally killing themselves because of this hate. Wake the fuck up. Yours truly, number 15. That post was shared and liked by a number of U.S. Women's National Team players, former players, I suppose, Becky Sauerbrunn as well, who has kind of been in and out of the team, but Sam Mewis as well, and Sam Mewis and Lynn Williams had a discussion about it on their most recent episode of Good Vibes FC as well, because they had a similar situation they could relate this to with the whole she who shall not be named.
Well, I think we do need to name her for folks who might be.
Okay, folks, that's fair. That's fair. Jalene Hinkle,
yeah.
Now Daniels, had some similar nonsense as well. Even I believe recorded a interview with the 700 Club at North Carolina's facility. Which, if you don't know about 700 Club, very conservative, very right wing outlet. Well, so yeah.
And just quickly for context for folks, with Hinkle, it was that she wouldn't wear. So every time the U.S. plays during. Actually, I don't think it's always during June. They will wear to celebrate essentially Pride Month. It's not always 100%. I want to say during June. I feel like it may or may not have happened maybe once or twice. Because also, I feel like they've been doing this for a few years. And also, like, thinking about the Olympics, it might, you know, potentially shift it here or there. But regardless, the U.S. Women's National Team will wear, like, has rainbow-colored numbers on their jerseys to celebrate Pride Month, essentially. And with Hinkle, she said, because of her beliefs, that she would not wear the jersey. I also learned that she did the same for North Carolina as well, which I did not previously know. And then obviously this caused a lot of uproar, given, especially for the U.S. Women's National Team at the time. Also had more out players, specifically one, Ashlyn Harris. I think this is probably the best thing that Ashlyn Harris has probably done in her entire career. Don't drag me for that, but and she obviously, you know, she called Hinkle out. But, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this Corbin Albert. I don't want to call it like a controversy per se, partially because in her head what she was saying she doesn't think is controversial, but also I don't know, to me controversy, I don't say like dumbs it. It doesn't dumb it down, but to me, it's not like calling it a controversy is not up to the level of important, I guess I would say, in which this is for the U.S. Women's National Team.
Yeah, there's not enough information in the word controversy, given what we're talking about.
Yeah, and so with Pino's Instagram story that Andre read through, Just Women's Sports, it wasn't messy. It was just like, you want to report on this, but there's not a clear way to do it. They did like a split screen of a picture of Pino and then her Instagram story. And very specifically, one current national team player and then technically two players who are in the bubble of the roster due to injury. So shared it on their Instagram story. So Abby Dahlkemper shared it. So did Lynn Williams. So did Alana Cook. Lynn Williams and Alana Cook both aren't on this roster due to injury. So it's not just that Pino shared it and then a player who's retired, like Sam Mewis, has shared it. A player like Becky Sauerbrunn, who, pain in my heart, is seems to be on her way out of the national team, shared it. It's also that current players are currently sharing it as well. And, you know, it's interesting because we've, since all of these posts have come out, we've been having, a lot of conversations and, we as in myself and Andre and other group chats we're in, completely calling out her actions for what they are, which is hurtful, disgraceful. It makes her work environment not safe. Maybe one of the big reasons why we're seeing a lot of players, especially current players, respond is that post, but basically is wishing harm on Pino, or is at least like leaning towards wishing harm on Pino. I think for a lot of people that took it a step too far, because one thing I've kind of gathered, kind of being around the women's national team at times, being around the men's national team, talking to former players coming in contact with them, is like how almost sacred they treat like the team in terms of being a really good teammate to everyone on the team and supporting each other and all those things. And I think there have been moments, especially in the U.S. women's national team past, where they've either done that and done it really successfully or tried to do it, did it not so successfully, thinking about old wind sprints and kneeling. But the like almost like the concept of the inner unity of that team, of being really good teammates to each other, is like held to a higher regard. And so wishing harm on your teammate, I think for a lot of them, like took it to another level. But it was interesting where I was like, you know, take away the homophobia, take away the transphobia. But I also think, and this is from friend of the pod, Tamara, who pointed this out, and I was like, that's 100% true, is that especially with someone like Pino, those two things also cannot be divorced. And that Pino is out and proud and has done a lot of work to try to make the space safer for others of all backgrounds, and like making the U.S. Women's National Team a safer place for them, where previously we had known, especially in with sometimes teams in the 90s and the early 2000s, that wasn't always necessarily the safest place to show up as your true self. That's the way I'll phrase it. And so those two things cannot be divorced for me. And I mean, like, it's a disgusting thing to say. Thinking about it from like an employer-employee standpoint, it harbors an unsafe work environment. Like, I don't know how you could be a person who is either out in that locker room and just like look at someone who basically is like, the way you live your life is wrong, and saying harmful things about people that are essentially just like you. So it's just, like, to me, it's just something that is like, obviously neither of us agree with it. And I feel like we are also trying to do the work to make sure that, to make soccer a more safe place for all. And I think also looking at the backdrop of the U.S. Women's National Team and all the work that they collectively have done to make their teams, like the environment that their team is in, safer, but also to better women's soccer around the globe, like sharing posts and having those beliefs is just like a spit in the face to that. And sorry, this is kind of a rant, but it also just like deeply frustrates me as a person who, like, I am Christian. I know a lot of Christians who try to justify their bigotry by hiding behind the Bible without literally knowing like the number one teaching, like, and you can ask anyone around the world, like what they think the number one teaching of the Bible is, or one of the most shared quotes. And so it's just like, it's frustrating in two ways, of someone who has not learned better, in that you are abroad. You are like literally living abroad, playing professional soccer. You should have known better, but also on the flip side, it's like, it's just, to me, it's still a part of this pattern of like, especially super conservative Christians hiding behind the Bible to justify their abuse and their bigotry, which is also like on a personal note is deeply frustrating. And yeah, it's just like, it's just, I don't want to say it's like, I want to dumb it down to it's bad vibes all around, but it's just extremely disappointing to still have this happen on the U.S. Women's National Team. And like, you might have a notes app apology, but also it's like, where is the work being done?
So this is where I want to get to, and I want to also get to finishing reading Pino's statement, because there was a piece at the bottom that she added as well. It says, "For all my trans homies enduring this horrific treatment day in and day out, I see you and I hear you and I am with you." She has a trans flag there at the end as well. So like Courtney said, that was shared by a number of players. So for me, I kind of look at this in a number of ways. I think definitely the Christian angle is a frustrating one. I grew up in the church. There's a lot that I, in a Baptist church, mind you, there's a lot that I agree with and don't, as I've kind of lived life and asked more questions. But I also know that there are plenty of people who are members of the LGBTQ community, and they're Christians as well. It is not something that are, they're not two divergent things. You can be both. as Courtney was saying, one of the main things that they always forget, especially with this evangelical, hate-filled version of Christianity, is that you're supposed to love people. That's really it. Like, that's the soul.
And do right by people.
Yes, that is the sole charge of it. And obviously, there's a lot also in there that people can cling to, but, and I'm not going to turn this into like a theology session because there's a ton to get into, because there's interpretations, there's Old Testament, New Testament, blah, blah. But basically, the central tenet is to love people. And again, this is kind of the same thing that Pino was saying. Are you making this space better for people? Are you making it more hateful? And if you're making it more hateful, you are on the wrong side, no matter what you think or no matter what you're portraying. The other angle I kind of look at it from is national team. This specific national team has a legacy that is way bigger than what they've accomplished on the pitch. This has been worked on and worked through a number mm-hmm. of players. We're talking generations of players, you know, decades of work. Being on this team should mean something. Being on this team is important. And yes, not everybody has had the exact same beliefs on the team. Okay, I don't think I need to say the name Carly Lloyd, but I'm pretty sure people know wasn't really down with any of the stuff. We even saw during the kneeling for the anthem thing. We also saw division there. Horan, Kelly O'Hara, Julie Ertz, you know, a number of players did not participate in that as well. So we know that it's not a monolithic thing in terms of thought. But in terms of making things better, this team has been important, not only to the U.S., but to the world. And I don't come at this from an American-centric view. These are things that have been said by other players in England, other players around Europe, other mm-hmm. players in South America, other players even in Mexico. Like, this team has had a level of notoriety and a level of importance, societal importance, that has been very helpful in furthering this sport and making this sport more inclusive in a number of ways in a number of different countries. It's not the only thing, but it is a significant piece of it. And mm-hmm. I think not understanding that legacy is foolish. And this is where I'm a little frustrated about the transition of the team working the way it has. Basically, never had that middle connected generation. You know, if you kind of look at the team now, you have players who are 28 to over 30 and players who are 23 and younger. And you're missing, they're losing recipes is kind of what I'm saying. And it's a little bit frustrating to have a player come out and not really understand that, oh, I'm on this particular team. My platform is different than it was before I got called up. Like, the stuff that she shared, still bad. If you're still playing with just PSG, it's still shitty to share those things. Still shitty to like that post about Pino. But when you're on this particular team, it's different. The other lens I want to say, and this is the last one that I have. I am deeply concerned and have been deeply concerned about just the ideologies that exist that have accepted levels of deep hatred within them and how normal they have become in this country. Mm-hmm. People can say, oh, I'm just Christian, or I'm Republican, or I'm conservative, or I believe this, or I believe that. And the central, like, core ideology is nothing but hate. And it's just something we have learned to just accept because it exists. Fuck that. I don't care how many times fucking idiots reelect Trump. Like, I don't care. I will never, ever give anybody a pass for believing an ideology full of hatred. And in the video, we didn't talk about this, but there was also a video that I believe has now been deleted, but it was a TikTok video of Corbin and her family. And they were talking about their pronouns are USA. And there was screeching of an eagle, which she was mimicking the screeching of an eagle in between these little segments of her family saying their pronouns are USA. In that, you see generations. You see people with white hair. You see people with, you know, middle-aged folks. You see young people. This is a thing that is concerning to me because it is deeply ingrained and it is hard. So part of it is obviously not giving Corbin a pass. She is an adult. She can think for herself. She's playing in France. She's doing things that she wants to do. She's living in a different country with a different language. There's accountability for her actions. And I want to get to her apology, but I want to stop talking and have you just respond. But I also think that it's a symptom, a symbol of a deep symptom. And I always go back to, especially looking at that video, I go back to listening to Toni Morrison in an interview where she says, "It is my feeling that white people in America have a very serious problem and they need to start thinking about what they are going to do about it." And it hasn't changed. These tenets of hate that are just like core to so many ideologies, whether it's patriotism, whether it's loving the military, deeply loving, which fine if you've been in the military, but again, loving it so deeply that it's part of your identity. Same with police. Anything that's an oppressive force, this country, by the way, is an oppressive force. Loving anything that's an oppressive force so much that you make it a part of your identity is naturally going to have so many layers of hatred wrapped up in it that you'll just become a deeply dangerous person to people around you. And I don't know, and it's concerning to think about how you live amongst millions of people, how you're expecting to live amongst millions of people who do not have to believe what you believe or live the way their lives, the way you would live your life. How do you make things safer for them? The answer to them is that you don't. And that's not fucking okay.
I would just say, like, I think having heard, I think the point about this legacy that the U.S. Women's National Team has created, and also, like, very specifically Pino's legacy as well, really is built on, like, diversity and inclusion, making the sport better, from which, like, making the sport that you eventually leave better than which in which you came, And that is such a core tenet and a core principle of this national team that stands basically directly in the face of sharing anti-LGBTQ posts and spreading through reposting hateful rhetoric. And those, you know, and those two things are extremely contradictory to each other. Like, and I can't even think of a way to ever justify sharing a post like that. And I think, you know, one thing that I still just keep going back to of like really at its core, this is becoming a workplace issue. Like it fundamentally definitely is a workplace issue. I will say that having to do, I can't remember the name of the courses, but they're basically, we used to call them multi-culti courses when we were in college, but basically like your anti-discrimination policy courses in like at your job. You have to take them every single year. Except if you're in the state of New York and you're at like a company of a certain size, you have to take them every single year. You have to do the things like say, like showing what you technically can and can't say, things like that, but also what to do when moments like this arise or you find out that like a coworker, for example, is spreading hate online. To me, for this, it's at its core, it really is a workplace issue, and like a safe environment issue. Like one thing that has been, and especially about the workplace thing, like one thing that's so striking to me is that at the end of towards the end of W Gold Cup, one thing that Twyla Kilgore said is that she was trying to instill joy back in these players, that like especially under Vlaco, like they did not have joy playing. They were not partaking or like not having joy being called up to the U.S. Women's National Team. And obviously we have like, you know, obviously these players are hyper competitive athletes and they're, you know, and they take pride and like, obviously they want to, you know, you can put in all the phrases about like playing for your country, blah, blah, blah. And they, you know, are always so gracious and honored to do it. But at the end of the day that they weren't playing with joy. And I'm just like, when you have a person who is sharing these anti-LGBTQ beliefs online, how can you find joy again, like when someone is sharing something like that, and that someone is technically your coworker? Like we have seen athletes like be able to separate and compartmentalize, especially like Black athletes constantly compartmentalize. Think about all the times that, you know, like a player like Crystal Dunn or Kristen Press, like, had to sit there and compartmentalize. And especially for Black people, you can see it in real time. You can, like, see them trying to do it so they can play a soccer game while all these things are happening in the scene behind them. But I'm just like, compartmentalization is not joy. It is not taking joy in what you do. And I just, like, don't necessarily know. I mean, maybe this is a segue into Corbin's statement, like, basically responding to Pino. And also, I will say, we know that Pino, through reporting at The Athletic, said the post was about Corbin Albert's post. But when you share these views, and also when you share a post that is wishing harm on a player that you could have played with, like, if the U.S. was better at bringing young players along in the system, there is a very good chance, or it could have previously happened, because sometimes the U-23s or U-20s play with the senior national team, a person that you played with, a person that you are current, a person that was a teammate of your current teammates, when you like a post that is wishing them harm, like, I'm just like, how do you come back? Or not how do you come back from that, but, like, there has to be a conversation had about that, and it's going to be an extremely difficult one.
Yeah, one of my things is, you know, obviously for me, it's the homophobia and transphobia that is the most, like, far-reaching and touches obviously the most people. And so that's what I focus on in terms of just being hateful and countering that. But in terms of also that liking of the post, she very, very clearly needs to apologize to Megan Rapinoe. And, like,
well, to me, those two things, homophobia and transphobia, can't be divorced from liking that post of Pino, knowing who Pino is.
Yes. And why, again, it was Pino. You know, there were a few, you know, Christian players who were upset at Pino talking about there is no God or something because of her situation, missing the penalty at the World Cup and all of those things. And then, of course, the way she gets injured in her final regular season game, club game. So, like, yeah, there was a lot of that as well. But again, inexcusable. And yeah, this is a good time to segue to the apology we actually got, which, if you missed it, I don't blame you, because it was posted as an Instagram story and it's gone already. So there's no other trace of it, but screenshots that exist. So found one of it. So here's what Corbin posted. I want to sincerely apologize for my actions on social media. Liking and sharing posts that are offensive, insensitive, and hurtful was immature and disrespectful, which was never my intent. I'm really disappointed in myself and am deeply sorry for the hurt I have caused to my teammates, other players, fans, friends, and anyone who was offended. I truly believe that everyone should feel safe and respected everywhere and on all playing fields. I know my actions have not lived up to that, and for that, I sincerely apologize. It's an honor and a privilege to get to play this sport and on the world stage, and I promise to do better. My response to that is, whatever. Honestly, whatever. Like, I would love to have a deeper conversation. What was your intent then? I think I said on Twitter that one of the things that I think is important in apologies is, why did you do what you did? Because then we can start talking about actionable steps after we find out why you did what you did. Now we can talk about how we make sure it doesn't happen again. What are other things we can look for? Like, how self-aware are you? Do you really understand the gravity of what you did? You know, the mistake that you've made? Or if it wasn't a mistake, it was very intentional at the time, own that. Clearly it was intentional at the time. You didn't see anything wrong with it or even agreed with it and felt strongly enough that you wanted to share it. Let's talk about that. Own that. Why are those your beliefs? Why are those things that you feel need to be shared with other people? Especially given your outsized platform because of the team that you now are connected to. So yeah, I have a lot of nitpicking I could do with the apology. I'm not going to sit here and say age is an excuse for any of this. I don't believe that it is. I think that anybody anywhere can believe that it is wrong to hate other people based on who they are, their gender identity, who they choose to love, not even choose who they love. So, like, yeah, I'm just kind of very much big whatever energy on this. She does say at the end, I promise to do better. I'd also love to know what better means. Does better mean I'm just not going to share these things in public anymore and continue to believe them? Or am I going to unlearn a lot of the hateful shit that I've learned that I now has been pointed out to me that is extremely hateful and harmful to a lot of people? Which one is it? It's one of the two. I feel like if it was the latter, we probably would have heard about that I don't know. Also, the question is, given how the world works these days, who knows if she even wrote this shit in the first place?
I want to bring up something I saw from that was reposted on Twitter, but it's from Dr. Raquel Martin. And it's about intent versus impact. And it's 6 slides, and I won't read through all of them, but I think the 2 most important ones is, first, she says, quote, intent will require you to do internal work. Things that you will likely need to do to address that, to address are lack of awareness, communication skills, breadth of education, conflict resolution, emotional intelligence. Impact will require us to assess the damage and the next steps, which will require recognition, accountability, empathy, apology, change in behavior, and consistency. And so to summarize it, you have to work on putting the sword away and processing what contributed to that decision. The sword part is, it makes sense in context of her greater post. And it says, we have to deal with the impact of what decision led to, figuring out the path to healing and whether this relationship can continue. So I say all that to say is that, and I've actually been saying this a lot in the past, I want to say 2 or 3 years, of at a certain point, intent does not matter. Impact does. And so my question, what I want folks to focus on, what I would want, for example, Corbin to focus on, is addressing the impact of what you said through action. And there are literally so many ways you can do that. At a certain point, intent does not matter. Impact does. And so what I'm looking to in the next, and hopefully in the next few days, because the US Women's National Team is going to play on Saturday. But is, you know, what are you doing to address the impact of your actions? Because I will say, and I mean, we brought this up so many times before, of the legacy that this team has left. And if you haven't listened to, what is it, Good Vibes FC, I think is the name, but very specifically Sam Mewis and Lynn Williams talked about this situation with Corbin. Like, I really enjoyed what they had to say about the situation. So I would like 100% also point you all in directions of hearing from a current and a former player on it. But for me at this point, it's like addressing the impact in what you have done. And a big old apology to Megan Rapinoe, like a large one, like skyrocket it at this point.
We had to get that off top first before we move on to everything else. And so we are going to move on to talk about She Believes from the on-the-pitch aspect of what we expect to see and kind of look for from each team. As mentioned, it is a truncated version of this tournament that as it has existed in the past. So we're getting 2 games back-to-back on Saturday. USA and Japan are playing first Saturday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. And then Canada-Brazil play same day, 3:30 p.m. There is a third place match on Tuesday and a final on Tuesday. So basically, each team is getting 2 games. And whoever wins that final is going to win the whole thing. But it's 2 games. So given that, Courtney, like U.S., Japan, Canada, Brazil, what are you expecting from pretty much each?
Well... I don't know why I said it like that. Sometimes I go.
I appreciated it.
Sometimes I go a little southern. One day I'll tell you a story about how I thought I was having a stroke because I caught a southern accent and couldn't drop it for a day and a half. Okay. That's a story for another time. But some things on the top. No Quinn, no Olivia Smith for Canada. They both dropped out due to injury and have replacement players called in. And at first I was like, this is a bad sign for Canada. But then I was like, oh my God, Desiree Scott is back in camp for Canada, along with Janine Becky, which is 2 huge boosts for them. But I kind of expect, can't lie, a little bit of the same for Canada and Brazil. I mean, it's a match that I'm very excited about. It's a match I'm super excited about. I think it's a really fun tactical matchup. Brazil is without the majority of their heavy hitters because of the coaching staff essentially just decided to not call the majority of them up, which, like I understand it's two matches. It's basically your last consequential international window before you make your Olympic roster decisions.
Well, let's call those players out, because I think, you know, obviously Dabinia seems to be injured, so she's not there. She's got a hamstring injury, but Adriana is not on the list either. So.
Well, but they also weren't called in, to be fair. When they made that announcement for that list, they weren't called in. This was before Dabinia's injury.
Yeah.
I believe there's also no Bia Zanerato, but please correct me if I'm wrong. Who, if you've listened to the last three episodes of this podcast, you know how I feel about her. She's my absolute fave. Except for her celebration, which I need her to stop, please. But but Marta is back in, which is exciting. And so Cristiani is back.
Yeah. Oh, like they went throwback. Throwback.
Look, the old heads.
Not the old heads.
We'll teach the young heads new things. Pulling a book out of Nubia's playbook. Hi, Nubia. It's very much a roster of, we're trying to see who's basically on the bubble for the Olympics and who we're going to call in. And also, I think that's kind of what these rosters are for. I think Brazil-Canada is going to be a very, very fun match, even though I very much expect Brazil to win, but now thinking about this roster, I kind of expect Canada to win, especially with Janine Becky back, and I want to see Desiree Scott get some minutes. But on the flip side, for the U.S. versus Japan, Japan is without June Endo, as we all mourn the loss of one of her ACLs.
That's all, Scott. Gone too soon.
I was like, literally, what pain for me, very specifically. The U.S. versus Japan is a really interesting matchup because this time last year, 2023, we saw the U.S. beat Japan, but we saw Japan doing some really interesting tactical things that eventually led to their success at the Women's World Cup, which they should have won. That's a conversation maybe for another time. A conversation we've had, go back in the archives, but we think Japan should have won. And then on the flip side with the U.S. Women's National Team, we've seen some really up performances, some really poor performances. With this roster, we do see Alex Morgan, for example, is back in. They did not call in an additional player like a Messiah Bright or even a Bethany Balser or even an Ashley Hatch, like players who, well, not for, sorry, not for Messiah Bright, unfortunately, but like for Bethany Balser and Ashley Hatch, for example, players who have been kind of in and out of national team camps, etc. But I don't really have a lot of expectations for this U.S. team because we still don't have, Emma Hayes still is not in charge. But also we saw the U.S. play in four different ways over this, over the W Gold Cup. So I'm I don't know what lineup they're going to trot out, what tactical plan they're going to try to implement. But I think also the big thing for this national team outside of everything that we just talked about with Corbin Albert is there's no Mitch Purse. And Mitch Purse bailed them out of a lot of situations. And so I'm I have questions. I still have questions about, I always have questions about the attack and I always have questions about the midfield. The defense, very solid. No worries. Naomi Girma, Abby Dahlkemper, or Naomi and Tierna, or Tierna and Abby. Not concerned about the center backs at all. I still have questions about that midfield and those forwards in terms of, not saying that they're not of quality, but I'm how are you going to basically do the jigsaw puzzle that every international manager has to make of getting the best out of your players while setting them up for success, where we've seen previously that jigsaw puzzle has not worked. Or if Japan high presses them, because we know the U.S. fundamentally can't deal with that.
Yeah, these games are going to be fun. I think starting the starting matchups, the opening matchups, are probably exactly what I would have chosen. I don't think I would have wanted to see Canada versus the U.S. again, or Canada-Japan. I think Canada-Brazil is perfect, and I think U.S.-Japan is perfect. Japan are fun because they can do the thing where they keep the ball and keep you chasing the ball and kind of maintain possession and still attack with threat. Or they can do what they did versus Spain at the World Cup and say, sure, you can have the ball, but as soon as you give it up, we're going to go straight through you. And that was, again, one of the funniest games that I've ever seen. So it's going to be very much a different challenge for the U.S. And I think they kind of stumbled on a system that ended up working and finally propelled them through the rest of the Gold Cup. But that game versus Mexico was not good for a number of reasons. Mexico had a good game plan, but also the lineup and the tactics for that game were awful. You're going to have to get them right versus Japan or you will get embarrassed. And so that's going to be very interesting to see what they think right looks like versus Japan, or this is going to be a very serious learning opportunity. Canada, Brazil. The thing about Canada for me, real quick, I wanted to go back to Japan because you mentioned Jun Endo, but Hina Sugita, I just think that they didn't have enough, like their best version of themselves at the World Cup relied on Jun Endo, and it's when they went to Hina Sugita instead of Jun Endo against Sweden that they ended up having the problems, because then that left side was very, very different. And so I'm hoping that they can work that out now. Like they've had enough time to kind of maneuver that or tweak that a little bit so that there's more comfort with that, because they're not going to have Jun Endo certainly for a while, which is unfortunate. So that is going to be something to keep an eye on and something that the U.S. can exploit if they're not quite ready for that.
Or if yet. They don't call in Narumi.
Yeah. So
secret baller.
Canada, Brazil. Bev Priestman's just interesting. I just like, you know, the two players, Olivia Smith and Quinn, who dropped out with injury, ended up getting Marie Yasmin Alidou from Benfica in camp, which that should have happened in the first place because she has been balling with Benfica. She scored the quarterfinal stage as well. So like against Lyon. So like, I think she also scored, I think, a brace against Barcelona. So like she's been performing quite well over there, and not just in the domestic league, like in the Champions League, which is like, hey, you do that, we're supposed to have, like, you know, it's supposed to mean something. But apparently Bev has a way she wants to play, and either you fit into that perfectly or you don't. And I don't really like that approach, especially when you're trying to build something. So I don't know. I don't really know what to expect from Canada. I did talk to Gabby Carl because she's on the Spirit and asked, you know, how excited she would be to actually play the U.S. on a non-waterlogged pitch. And she was like, we are very excited because they didn't feel like they could show the best version of themselves. And honestly, who could? So that could be fascinating. So it does seem like Canada's motivated at least to get a matchup with the U.S. Brazil, I think you covered it. Like, this is a fun lineup and a weird, I did not expect this from them. I thought they were kind of, you know, they used the Gold Cup to really move into a almost like a new generation, and it worked very well. The only game they did not look like themselves was the final, unfortunately, against the U.S. Because I think a better game plan and players in better positions to help them succeed would have probably given the U.S. a few more problems. But now they go back and they bring in a lot of the vets, and I just don't know how they're going to mix it all up. So this is going to be kind of fascinating. Really a reason to watch every single team in this very intently. So I'm excited for it. I just wish it wasn't so truncated.
Yeah, and I think part of that's because it's an Olympic year. I have no insider information, but I would expect on non-Olympic and non-World Cup years for the W Gold Cup to become a summer tournament. Or it would be like, walk with me here, it'd be every year that World Cup qualifying isn't happening, the World Cup or the Olympics. So like every third year, essentially. Because you think one summer is going to be World Cup qualifying, the next summer is going to be the World Cup, the next summer is going to be the Olympics, and then that's when you get the W Gold Cup back in. Or they just do a W Gold Cup, for example, without like the U.S. and Canada. Because I can't lie, or the U.S. and Mexico, or Canada and Mexico, or something. But yeah, like, yeah, the Sheba Youth Cup is just kind of a bit weird. It's also just like kind of bizarre because it's outside of Japan. It's just like familiar foes. So sometimes it's kind of like, how much are you going to? I'm not saying that something isn't going to be gained, but like, also there's I think at times there's only so much you can take from, but also only so much you can be challenged by a team that you quite simply play all the time. Not as much like U.S. Brazil, but one thing like U.S. Canada. Like, I feel like they play each other at this point maybe once a year, maybe once every 18 months. Like, I feel like the U.S. is always playing Canada at some point, which just happens when you're in the same confederation fundamentally. But yeah, sometimes it's like, I think sometimes it's helpful for how far, like it can show how far you've come. Sometimes I do wish it was like a, maybe like a U.S. versus Germany. It took me a while to get there. Or like, even like, again, like U.S. versus Portugal is like a matchup, for example, that I really would want to see. Sometimes I do wish that like the U.S. was kind of playing a bit more of teams that challenge them just in a different way than someone like playing a team like Canada would, just because of the, quite simply, the amount of times they play each other.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. I'm excited for both games. I should be there. I'm excited about that. So I don't get to really do much traveling. I kind of have to wait for the team to come to me. And so I'm kind of excited about being able to go there. And I will be very interested in crowd reaction to a number of things, including number 15. So don't let me down.
Yeah, I'm a bit bummed that I did not plan early enough to try to get myself down there. I wish I had. And I was thinking about, like, someone just want to Venmo me a few $100 so I can go buy a flight. But no, I will be watching from home and likely criticizing media coverage. Because once you work in TV, it's a thing you can't turn off. All of a sudden, anytime someone watches soccer with me and there's like a proper studio show, I pull back the curtain for everyone, which no one enjoys except for me. Yeah.
All right, let's get to the rest of this. We're going to do a quick Europe wrap up because honestly, we have been, because of a number of things, the Gold Cup and, you know, obviously the Corbin Albert situation and now She Believes and obviously Emma Hayes coming in and Lily Johannes getting a call up. Like, there's been a lot to talk about from a U.S. perspective. So we have kind of neglected Europe, and that's not really what we do here. We do like to go. And I'm actually really disappointed about it because we missed Sockgate. The whole sock thing was hilarious. We could have had a lot of fun with that, but we missed it.
Oh, my God, we did. Oh, that was
There are so many things that happened that could have just been very, very fun. But it's fine. I'm just going to kind of run through kind of the – and we'll get into things in depth more as they kind of reach some measure of a crescendo. But I kind of also want to say, like, I'm going to run through some of the top leagues in Europe real quick. And I've heard on other podcasts that people are kind of like, without relegation and promotion, that like teams don't really have incentive to try if you know you're not going to like good enough to win the Shield or the championship. And I'm just like, that's very interesting because I'm looking at y'all's tables right now and I'm trying to figure out, especially when you're in a league that only has like one relegation spot, what the hell else everybody else is doing, because most of the leagues are wrapped up already. So like,
Everyone should do what Italy does. The top five spots have a tournament to play for the championship, and then the bottom five spots fight for to not get relegated.
Yeah, listen, absolute, I'm here
that is
for that.
Absolute chaos.
It is chaos, but I'm here for it. It kind of because listen, like, look, I know I just said like we don't neglect Europe, but I'm gonna be real with y'all. What, Barcelona has a 12-point lead at the top of the table. They gonna win that. And again, it's not like there aren't stories to be told lower down the table. But when you're looking at like what are the main storylines, it's gonna be who wins the league. It's gonna be one of the primary storylines in every single league. Not specific to Europe, but it's just what it is. And I believe France. Lyon, I think, has a, what, 7-point lead at the top? PSG ain't making that up.
Maybe
that's
the
a wrap.
Maybe the PSG of old, but not the
PSG.
Where Diani. And I mean, look, Chiwenga and Katoto are like a lethal pairing.
They're great. But
however,
it ain't happening.
There are times where they've struggled to score in the league, so I also don't expect.
Yeah.
I don't expect Lyon to give, unless there's like everyone breaks their leg. I don't expect them to give up that. A 7-point. Yeah, I was like, it has to be some insane situation. I was like, I don't expect everyone to. I was like, unless you can take out their whole starting 11, I don't expect them to give up a 7-point lead.
Yeah, that's not happening. And then also you look at Germany, Bayern, I believe they beat Wolfsburg like 3-1 or 4-1 or something. Like, it was just an absolute, that game was unfortunate because Wolfsburg, it was actually, just kidding, it was 4-0. Wolfsburg just kept missing chances. They had a lot and just couldn't do it. And every now and then, you know, they'd miss a few chances, then Bayern would score. And then they miss a few chances, then Bayern would score. And eventually you get 4-0 and it looks awful, and it is awful because now Bayern basically, they won the league. They had a 7-point lead above Wolfsburg, and you're just not going to make that up. The only league now,
and even prior to that, Wolfsburg was dropping points. They like tied.
Well, yeah,
someone random. Struggling.
And so we're going to have to get into this later, like, or on another podcast. Wolfsburg is losing a lot of talent as well. So, like, obviously Oberdorf is going to Bayern, but they're losing a lot more than that. And that's, this is weird. I don't know what's happening over there. But all right, let's go ahead and do the only real title race that's happening of any import among the big leagues in Europe is in the WSL. You got Manchester City currently at the top of the table on goal difference, and Chelsea are, well, I guess they're on top of the table by points now because Chelsea have a game in hand. So 46 points for Manchester City, 43 for Chelsea. The goal differential for each is, well, not each. There's one goal separating the two. Man City has 37. Chelsea has 36. So, yeah, basically just waiting for somebody to stumble, and then we'll have a better, a clearer picture on who might be in the lead, or we'll get to the point where it's the final day and it's goal differential that's going to matter, and we'll see. So there's a few scenarios still to play out to figure out that league. So this is a fun title race, but again, across all of the leagues in Europe, there is only one. So, whatever. But there's also the Champions League. So I wanted to get to that real quick as well, because the quarterfinals happened. They are set. We have the semifinals now. Two legs, of course, in these. So there's home and away for each. Barcelona and Chelsea are going to play again. I am mad and scared, but it's fine as a Chelsea fan. And then Lyon and PSG. Kind of a boring one, but we're going to get that, and maybe PSG
can... That's not boring. It is chaos boring. Anyway. Yeah,
they play all the time, and it's just like, whatever.
I know, and every single time, there's a piece of chaos. There's never been a not chaotic game between the two of those. Do you remember the last time these two played in a Champions League semifinal? They made Wendy Renard score an own goal.
Yes, I mean... Chaos. The games aren't boring, but the matchup is boring. That's what I'm saying. The matchup is boring. But, you know, it's still, these are going to be fun games to watch. Although, Courtney, I have something to tell you. This Barcelona-Chelsea thing, both of these semifinals are April 20th. That's a Saturday. Do you know want to know when Barcelona-Chelsea kicks off the first leg? Do you want to know?
Is it like 12:30?
Absolutely not. You wish. 7:30 a.m. on Saturday.
Oh, correct. Sorry, I meant 12:30 local time. Even
local
though
time, yeah.
Technically 1:30?
Yeah, I think, because it's in Spain. So, yes, correct.
1:30 p.m.
Yep.
So I tried to be there and didn't get what's on.
Get ready for that. That's going to be a really unfortunate situation for me. I think I'm even going to my cousin is getting married that day, which Corbin Albert, plug your ears. He's gay. Going to a gay wedding on that day. It's going to be fun. But yeah, I'm really excited about that, but it's going to be a long ass day. I'm going to tell you that.
Yeah. I wanted to go. I become a little feral at the bridge and I really wanted that.
Well, April 20th or April 27th. I don't know if that one's going to be at the bridge or King's Meadow. I don't think they've announced yet. Have they?
No, it has to be at the bridge. They're not allowed to play women's Champions League games at King's Meadow. They had to, in seasons past, for the group stage, they got like special permission from UEFA to play those games at King's Meadow because it's technically not up to their like the UEFA standards that they're putting across for
Well, that's happening. We will do more in-depth kind of looks at those games, either reviews or previews. And if anything happens of import in the leagues, of course, we'll get to that as well. Now that I've talked some shit, hopefully one of these teams with like a massive like 7-point lead stumbles and like loses two games in a row and things get interesting again.
I have one more thing to say.
But do you? Because I want to get to the NWSL.
Yes, I do. Because we... one Lily Johannes plays for Ajax, and I've actually been paying attention to the Dutch league a little bit because almost every year in the Dutch League, in the Eredivisie, I can spell the word, how to say woman in Dutch, I don't know how to pronounce it. 20 has, like, outside of Ajax winning actually last season, 20 has been dominating left and right. And earlier this season, they actually had a 7-point gap between them and Ajax, who's currently in second. But, currently it's sitting at 7, so it must have been more than 7. However, 20 has been dropping points slowly and surely. They've been getting ties here or there. It hasn't been ideal. And so I'm hoping, and Ajax beat them 3-0 on March 3rd, which is a huge deal. And so I'm hoping that Ajax somehow overcomes those 7 points so Lil Johannes can have a trophy in her hand at the end of the season.
So you had me thinking that we were actually going to see a team come back from 7 points, but I'm looking at the table and it's still 7 points. So like...
It was first of all, it was larger before, and I guess the reason why.
But also, before I get hype about it, I'm gonna need it to get a lot closer.
Well, it's because Ajax lost on March 31st. If they had won that game, the gap would have been 4 points, which is something I'd been keeping my eye on. But they lost, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But 7 point gap. I don't know if 20 can drop it because they have 3 points. I don't know. Something crazy would happen. But let's hope and pray for Lily.
All right, let's move to the NWSL. It's enough of that. We've been talking for a while, so you know we don't want to have another 2-hour podcast, but I do want to kind of look at the last 3 weeks of the NWSL, the first 3 weeks of the NWSL 2024 season, and just kind of like, you know, do some shout outs, some observations, things that you've noticed. I'll kind of say, like, one thing that I've noticed that is interesting is that these, you know, teams that come in with the idea that they want to play possession and possess the ball and keep the ball, it's very funny to try to do it in a league like this. I applaud the efforts because tactical variety is fun and does make leagues, especially, this is where I think the NWSL is a really unique opportunity, because I think I've talked about this before, but a lot of other leagues, especially top-heavy leagues, have teams that try to play some form of intricate possession football. And most of the other teams are doing either hybrid versions of that in the middle of the table, and then the other ones are kind of doing like banks of four and trying to defend. And so you don't get a ton of tactical variety there either, like trying to figure out how to break down defense sitting back is an important skill, and I do think that that is worth kind of figuring out. But ultimately, when it comes to tactical variety, you don't have a ton, and I think the NWSL can lend itself to a number of different styles of play with and without the ball. So I'm kind of intrigued by some of this, but I'll say that some of these possession teams, when they play possession in Europe, one of the things they do is they push their defensive lineup really, really high. So you'll get center backs, sometimes even just hanging out in the attacking like half. And like we've seen this from Barcelona a lot, like Mapi Leon, she gets up there really high. Sometimes she'll clip in balls into the box or something. She's standing basically in the center circle. Like they just push everybody up really high, tightens the space, closes the space, makes shorter passes, more high percentage passes to be able to keep circulation of the ball. And of course, when the ball is lost, more people are close by to be able to press and win it back and then circulate possession. So yes, it's one way to do it. However, in the NWSL, you got to keep them center backs back. You cannot play that game. You cannot have such a high line because you will get smoked. And it is very funny trying to see how teams are trying to adjust to that. And basically what we're seeing is two center backs, especially if you look at the pass networks I've been dropping, two center backs are basically where you would expect them to be. There's basically right on the edge of that, like between the like middle third and defensive third. It's like right on that edge, cusp right there. And then there's a line right at the halfway line of just midfielders, fullbacks. Sometimes you'll get like attacking players drop into the center circle. Like that's how they're trying to form that line right there. But of course, that limits numbers that you can actually put in the box or an attack as well. So there are some things to figure out. And tactically, I think it's kind of fascinating. But I have noticed like, we're going to play this possession and like game and we're going to push you. Like we're going to do. And it's like, you are, but with a caveat.
Yeah, some things I've observed about the NWSL. And Andre, I know you want to bring this up, but I just want to start by saying you've been a fan of Jenna Bike I too have been a fan of Jenna Bike, but since she played at Gotham, I called her a firecracker back then. I knew she had this in her locker. Because she, one time, I'm not joking, it was actually when they were playing the rain, she had to guard Pino in like literally her first NWSL appearance. It was like, welcome to the league, you're guarding Megan Rapinoe. But she played as a wingback and she was so good. I was really high on Jenna Bike then, and I'm still really high on Jenna Bike now. I want to give a shout out to Rachel Kundananji for not only scoring her first NWSL goal, but being the first Zambian player to play in the NWSL and the first Zambian player to score in the NWSL. Absolutely love that. And she let everybody
know.
And
I love it.
She let everybody know. The goal she scored was an absolute banger. And if you haven't seen like Bay FC's video about it, where they like show her grabbing the flag and putting it over her shoulders in like super slow-mo, and literally you can see like tears welling in her eyes, I was like, honey nut filios everywhere. I love this. Some other things. Houston decided to wake up. Wake up in the second half of a match.
for about 20, 25 minutes.
And what I also say, it was a little bit of Bay FC crumbling. Yes.
Yep.
My tweet got put on blast. And I was like,
can we talk about that for a second?
I wasn't the only one tweeting it. Also, I tweet in the abyss all the time.
I don't even want to talk about this from your perspective. Like, I just want to talk about this from Houston's perspective. Like, y'all play, first of all, that game was 3-2 and y'all look bad again for like 2/3 of that game. You happen to have
sparking joy.
Right. Like, you're not back yet. Y'all can't tell me that, like, this was the plan all along. Like, we haven't seen this. And I'll say, Fran Alonso finally did a smart thing, put Peterson back on the left, Puntigam on the right. Like, he finally figured out, these players probably play on these other sides for a reason. And he made a switch, and things, like, looked better. But a third of a decent game?
Well, also, Peterson's not a center back.
Well, there's that too, and right? So he's still players out of position. But I'm just like,
and you put Diana Ordonez as a 10. And look, y'all know how I feel about Ordonez, a fellow who, and I tweet score Ordonez every time she scores because I love
it. Which hasn't been a lot recently.
Ever. Don't drag my girl. However,
I'm just saying,
he also played her as a 10, and it was like, what is going on here? The only thing I will celebrate him for is having great goal celebrations.
Like, yeah,
oh my god, personality.
All I'm saying is, for Houston, like, you chose a very interesting time to start talking shit, and I hope that it's fixed, because if it's not, that is going to be one of the, like, age like milk on the sun is what's gonna happen. That is just not gonna go well for you. But okay, all right, you got more faith in Fran Alonso than the rest of us have, which I guess you probably should.
Yeah, it was, that tweet was a funny thing to wake up to, where I was like, I know, like, Souls and Goodsy were like, put me on blast. And I was like, I don't want to be put on blast. I get in trouble at work.
I did not ask for this.
I was like, mostly so I don't get in trouble at work. I was like, put me on blast for having a bad opinion. I don't care. I just don't want to get in trouble. Cause still don't have a functioning knee, a fully functioning knee. Got to keep health insurance. Want to give a shout out to Mal Pugh getting back. First goal.
Swanson, but yeah.
Oh my god. I do it every time.
I mean.
Every time.
She did give us permission, so.
I know. But yeah, Mal Swanson coming back, getting a goal. Joyous celebration. One thing, I don't know if you picked up on this week.
I'm sorry. I want to talk about that Mal Pugh. Look, I just did it. I want to talk about that Mal Swanson goal. Because first of all, that pass from Jenna Bike was amazing. It was dope. The little flick that she did through the line, it was great. And she's been balling. But I want to talk about Mal, because Mal was hot. She thought she should have got the first pass.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, have you seen more players complaining this weekend? I saw like 7 KC players getting mad at their teammates. I saw Bay FC players getting, like, Houston players getting mad at their teammates. Like, before Ordonez's first goal, because Sanchez took an extra touch before crossing it over, you literally see her like throwing her hands up in the air. And I was like, is anyone noticed that like everyone's mad this weekend? Like, Mal Pugh, Mal Swanson put her hands up in the air like 6 times over the course of the match. I was like, is everyone okay? Everyone's mad saucy.
That one was funny too, because she was mad. But the thing is, she was, I don't think she saw the defender. I think the defender, either in her reaction or where they were, was still keeping her on side. And I think she thought that she was behind the line. And so she was frustrated, like, oh, now I'm out of the play. Like, you can't pass to me. And then as soon as she kind of recognized that there's the ball, oh, like, she snapped immediately. She was just like, oh, touch, boom, left shot, and inside the goal. Like, she just like snapped in and scored the goal and then was celebrating. But it was like such a funny, like, she basically went through like what, three extreme emotions in like half a second. It was extremely hilarious.
I genuinely saw that happening so many times this match window. And the thing is, like, once I saw Swanson do a shit earlier in the game too, I then immediately started picking up on it every time I was watching a game. I was like, this person's frustrated. This person's frustrated. They're like, pass me the ball. And so it was very, it like happened a ton during the San Diego game too. Like, it was just very funny all around, of just like, I was like, are y'all okay? Do y'all need a vacation? I mean, probably, but they were just like extra spicy at each other. And I was like, dang.
Let me think. I'm trying to think if they, oh, you know what? I knew what I want to do. So you mentioned Jenna Bike, and I definitely wanted to shout her out because I think she's had a great start to the season. I think even Mal said, like, whatever you did in the offseason, like, keep doing that. And I would agree. Like, she's just got sauce coming. Like, she's just been a very fun player. And she's been, like, you can see flashes, but she's done this consistently throughout, like, game to game now. And obviously, it's only three games through the season, but it's just been fun to see. I also want to shout out Vanessa DiBernardo, because she's been so good in this role. And not only just because she's scoring goals, but like, her impact in midfield has been super, super dope. And like, you can kind of see why, like, Chicago fell apart once their midfielders left. Because like, yeah, especially DiBernardo, like, this is what she does. Like, this is just good shit to see. And it's been dope to see her perform.
Well, when you see how DiBernardo is performing, Morgan Cattrall is performing, when Casey Stoney decides to start her, Dani Colaprico has been performing. Yeah. It's like very easy to see, you know, how Casey Chicago don't like just midfielders. I don't know. But how, like, yeah, how Chicago's midfield just fell apart last season. I also wanted to, for DiBernardo, you can tell her impact on the pitch is so important, because as soon as she subbed out, Kansas City loses all control of the game.
They fucking, like, fall
it's
apart.
It's so it is so extremely noticeable when she is in and when she is out. Like, everything that happened in the Angel City match, I know these VAR checks have been absolutely ridiculous, but everything that happened, like, all the chaos that Angel City created going forward happened as soon as DiBernardo left the pitch. They're like, she's out. Oh, it's our time now.
It's funny, because I think, like, Sam Lewis and Lynn Williams were talking about that a bit on their Good Vibes FC episode on the latest one. And it was funny, because it was like, yeah, they're scoring a lot of goals, but they're conceding a lot of goals, but they're mostly conceding those goals when DiBernardo is gone, because as soon as she's out, yo, it's a wrap for them. They just fall apart.
Like, an immediate wrap. I also want to give a shout out to Temba Chawinga.
Whew.
I don't know what they did to them sisters, but they're both cheat codes. They're both terrorized back lines. My gosh. Yo, I had never seen Sarah Gordon like that against Chawinga. I was like, dang. Yeah. Chawinga's a menace, making our best center back, or tied for best center back in this league. Look a little, there was some absolute violence happening when Chawinga stepped on that pitch. And Chawinga and Bizanarado playing together, also evil.
That's dope.
I love it, but it's evil. It's real evil.
It is. And I also want to, like, not laugh, but, like, Orlando is trying to hold on until Barbara Banda gets there, and I completely understand why. But, like, it's just funny to watch them, because they basically just have a bunch of wingers getting the ball, and they don't have a focal point at all. And so, like, Adriana's trying to be in this, in, like, two places at once. So she, like, the last game, like, nobody was on the right. She was, like, tucked in and trying to be, like, a center forward and trying to, like, be that presence. But, like, they're naturally one of, like, they're wide creators. They have a lot of wide creators on the team, which is great. But they need that central focal point, and it's just funny to kind of watch them, because you can just see in their games, like, this is where, if this is where this player is, like, there's a perfect fit and she just can't play yet. And unfortunately, hopefully they get her on the pitch soon, because they're going to be scary as hell when she's on the pitch. But just watching them until then, it's kind of funny, because you're like, yeah, y'all.
Stuck. Yeah, I was like, y'all just really need a center forward.
They do. They're like cutting people up on the wing, and then they're like, ah, well, guess I'm going to shoot. And it's like, hey, you're like 30 yards away.
I know, but I'm also like, you're telling me you don't have anyone in your locker room that could just play as a nine for like
false nine, something. Like, yeah.
False nine, like, there has to be someone there. You're telling me all players.
I'm trying to remember. Didn't like, I know she's a rookie, but Corey Dyke, I think she played, I know she played deeper. That's kind of the role that she's been in. But I think just like pretty much Sam Coffey and every other player, she's also played more forward. Like, I don't know, just get like somebody kind of playing a more advanced, just call it a more advanced central attacking midfielder role. I mean, hopefully you get Banda in the squad soon, but like until then, you got to find a way to get a center forward, because everybody's doing good work on the wings, but they just got, as soon as they do the good work, they're like, well, I'm either shooting or I'm putting a cross in, and nobody's in there for the cross. So it's tough.
Yeah. I'm just like, I remember it was one preseason game for Gotham last season. Sinead Farley played as a nine, because they, like, half the players are missing. There was some reason that was happening.
Gotta do what you got to do.
And it's like, you just got, look, it's like three games. You're telling me you wouldn't also just let a player be like, you know what they should do? Go put a center back up there, okay? Just big target player. Two
Emily
games.
Emily Sams? Emily Sams, center forward era?
No, because they really need her at the back. However, yeah, another center back.
A different one?
A different center back. For example, if Rafaeli was like healthy right now, I'd be like, go put her up there for two games.
She'd be someone perfect else who because she was cutting up at the Gold Cup.
I know. I was like, just go play her as a center forward. Look, we will just do Arnold Clark greatness for two games for the Orlando Pride. No, but I do like the things that Orlando is doing and putting together. I also know that Orlando has sent me a jersey. I just haven't been back in my apartment because I'm still rehabbing. And so I know it's sitting for me, because I saw the package that it came in for other people. And I was like, I'm ready for this. So thank you, Orlando. But I just haven't gotten it yet. Last thing on the NWSL, I don't have concerns for Gotham. However, Gotham any team without Midge is just completely different. But Gotham without Midge and without Lynn does not spark a ton of joy. Also, I don't know what Juan Carlos Amoros is doing with Emily Sonnet right now, but I want it to stop. She's just like, they're almost playing her like the center attacking mid right now. And I'm like, I fundamentally don't understand. You can play her as a six. And a double pivot with another six. Do that. So one time I looked up and I was like, why is Emily Sonnet striking the ball at the top of the box? And this is no shade to her, but has that literally ever been her forte? She's always, in college, she played as a center back and an outside back. And then she came into this league playing as a center back, went to Sweden, played as an outside back, and has come back and played as a center back. And just very recently has become a midfielder. Make her a six and put Crystal Dunn in the center of the park. Like, I don't know. That's
so,
how I feel about
that. I'm glad you said Crystal Dunn, because I was just going to say, this is why I get so frustrated about the whole, you know, versatility thing and can play multiple positions, because some players get to actually play multiple positions and some players don't. They say, oh, you're versatile. Here you go. You're going to play the position that is maybe your third best and that's it. And other players, without any evidence, like whatever evidence did you have that Emily saw, aside from when she's in Sweden, maybe that's what they're trying to bring back. Sweden, the Swedish version of Emily Sonnet. So when she was playing for Sweden, there's really not a lot that you have seen from her, particularly and then specifically in the NWSL, that tells you that she's an attacking talent worth spending time, intentionally spending time in those positions, whereas Crystal Dunn is. And so it is confusing.
Like, I don't know if it's because like Roosevelt is injured right now and how that factors into it. But I was just like looking at all of her positions, especially against North Carolina, where I actually thought that game was actually a lot more even than I thought it was. At first I was like, oh, North Carolina is balling and Gotham doesn't know what to do. But I actually thought the game was, for the most part, a lot more even looking back at it. But I was, the entire time I was like, I actually tweeted this. Like, I was like, Crystal Dunn, handshake emoji. Jaden Shaw, handshake emoji. being put out wide when they should be centrally.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, Please make it stop. But I think everything else for Gotham is actually working quite well. I think Tiana Davidson has come into her own really well. Bernina on one side. Even though I haven't seen the signature Bernina pullback, I know you know exactly what I'm talking about. She does that one move every game and it gets everyone every time. It is actually comical at this point. Yeah. It's like Trinity Robbins nutmeg. Like, it's her signature move. And even though everyone's seen it a trillion times, it still gets them.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's just very funny.
Hey, you can build a good career out of that. It has happened many players have done that. Okay. I know we're long, but I do want to mention one thing at the end of this because it has been frustrating the hell out of me in these NWSL games. And it is the VAR process and how long it is taking. This has been one of the most painful experiences of watching like live soccer that I have faced ever, because this is not a game that stops. It stops once for halftime, and that's it until the game is over. And that's great. There's a running clock. These things are good things for the game. Now, understand that VAR is here. Understand that you want to get the calls correct. But when you stop games for 5, 6, 7, 10 minutes at a time, that is not part of the game. And then you're tacking on outrageous amounts of stoppage time. So games are no longer 90 minutes. They're 100 minutes, 105 minutes, sometimes even longer, 110, 115. I think over the weekend, the Spirit played an extra, I think it was 21 minutes. I think that's 13 minutes and then 9 maybe. I can't remember specifically. And if it was, I just did that math wrong. But it was over 20 minutes of stoppage time combined. Yo, I'm not a referee. I know the rule book is dense. I know that there's a lot to talk through, but I am like, they got to do something about the length of these delays, because some of it is outrageous. Like, you just have somebody standing there with their hand up, just like, I'm in charge, so I'm not going to allow play to continue, and I'm just going to stand here. And then they stand there with their finger on their ear for multiple minutes, and then maybe in 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes, they'll tell them to go to the monitor. And then they'll go to the monitor. And then there's still time of them staring at the monitor. And so now you're not only playing, but you're staring there watching somebody watch TV. And it's just very, very boring.
And then they come back TV.
And they may do something like, oh, that's a yellow card. Great. Here's a yellow. Play on. Or nope, never mind. No call. Play on. I just like the standard for what constitutes a check needs to change, and we very, very much need time limits, because this is outrageous.
Well, I think what gets me, because most of the time when the ref goes to the monitor, I'm not actually frustrated by the time they're taking to look at things. The time I'm frustrated by is that it takes them like literally 5 minutes, because most of the time they're at the monitor 1 minute, maybe 2 minutes. Like, for the most part, I know that what was it, in the Orlando game, that was like a little bit of an anomaly. But for the most part, when the ref goes over to the monitor, they're not actually there for a long time. What makes me mad is I'm like, why is it taking you 7 minutes? And I mean, it's not actually 7, right? Like, it's normally like 2 or 3 minutes.
It has been very close to 7.
I know, but I'm talking about like, for the most part, it's normally like 2 or 3 minutes of them telling the ref to go over to the monitor, which adds up over the course of a game. But I'm like, why is it taking you 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes to tell the ref to go over to the monitor? Because we've seen in other leagues, like, and in other leagues, for the most part, what's actually the longest part about the VAR check is the ref going over to the monitor and watching it. It's not like the VAR getting in the center referee's ear to then tell them to go over to the monitor. For some reason, the NWSL, it takes them at least 2 to 3 minutes of conversation to then tell them to go over to the monitor. And I think that's what's frustrating to me, because every time I've like seen VAR, like the actual ref at the monitor, shout out to the monitor that was in the cooler in the Kansas City game. But like every time I've actually seen the ref at the monitor, for the most part, they're not there like that long of a time comparatively to when they're just telling the ref to go over there. And I'm like, is it that y'all don't know how to communicate? Is there a problem with comms where you're cutting in and out? They can't hear you. Like, why is it taking 3 minutes for you to just tell them to go look at something?
Yeah, that part is super painful because then you know there's another delay. And I think that's probably what extends it as well. Like they're not actually, like if they would have gone over within the first like 30 or 45 seconds, then maybe it's not that long. But when you do all that and play is halted and everybody's just standing around, like as a, if I were in those games, I would just get so frustrated. Like it would legitimately throw me off because I would just get so frustrated because game, like a soccer game needs to flow. And that's a massive disruption. And if you're whatever the momentum is, whatever the game plan is at the time, things can change a lot with these delays because they're basically just like unplanned timeouts. And they are very disruptive to the game. And one thing that I've been thinking about trying to figure out, like maybe trying to talk to Don Scott or somebody else, maybe a couple players about this, but I'm also wondering about the impact of two things. One is physical impact of stopping high intensity running and then restarting it again, like with that short amount of a break. Like it's not like a breather break. It's longer. It's more extended. So you do get some measure of like muscle relaxation and then you have to kick it right back into gear at high intensity again. And that to me feels like it's probably not ideal for professional athletes to do, especially when we know all of the things they do in terms of activation, nutrition, sleep, to get themselves ready at that like prime physical shape at that moment for the kickoff. And so that's got to be difficult. But then also the extra amount of stoppage time. And I understand it's like ball and play thing that they're working on. But the problem is players have already.
Less exact with that.
Yeah, I agree. That's also a bullshit argument. But yes, it is frustrating, though, because now when players are at the peak of fatigue, they're being asked to play 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 more minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really tough and really, really dangerous to have players do that. It's different when they're doing it maybe in like the middle of the game or whatever. But when you tack it on, especially at the end of a like 90 minutes, players are already exhausted. Like that's already the peak of fatigue that they're going to feel. And they're having to push through because of VAR delays earlier in the game. And that's not fair to the players. So like, yeah, I've got a lot of questions about it from just like a process standpoint, but then physically, it doesn't feel like it's a very player-centric thing to that we're doing right now. And I really think it has to change for both of those reasons.
Yeah, I think one thing that's also annoying about VAR is the NWSL is deploying in ways we've like never seen before. Like for example, and I will confidently say this, and actually Christina Uncle told Adriana, who told me that like technically the ref can be sent over to the monitor and then like give a yellow card, like just a yellow card as that result. But that also like flies in the face of basically everything we've seen VAR used for in,
yes,
like at the World Cup level, but also in the men's European leagues. Like we've seen, like we're just seeing things that we've never seen before. And it's just like, can we just like stick to the rules that we're used to? Like, I think one of the reasons why, for example, in those men's leagues that like, or even at the Women's World Cup, we're not seeing like the ref go over to the monitor and then like look for a red card challenge and then only give a yellow card. Because I think part of the reason is that if you did that for every single time, then that would really slow down the game and there would be no flow to the game. And I think that's part of it too. That's like, you see things in real time. And you see an example of things in real time of like, this is how VAR is used. You can only go over to the monitor for a red card challenge. It's either like a red card. If you haven't given a card, it's a red card or nothing. Or if you have given a card, you can upgrade it to a red card or downgrade it from a straight red to a yellow, like for example. And that's something that we've seen since VAR has come into these, especially to these men's leagues, like, you know, years ago. I think that's what's also frustrating about all of it too. And yeah, the thing about the minutes, and like I've been harping on that honestly since the first game of league play where we had like 8 minutes, I was like, why is it so long? If you average 10 minutes of extra time across every game a team plays in a 24 game season, that's an extra 240 just on average, an average of extra 240 minutes on these players' legs a season, when we know how hard it is to play in the NWSL. Because now at this point, it feels like it's averaging 15 minutes. I was like, some quick math of it's a 24 game season, right? That's an average of 360 extra minutes on these players' legs over the course of a season. That's not even including the players that go play internationally. That is a lot. That is a lot of load for these players to carry when you don't have, I will say, what teams in Europe have, where you have academies. You can call up young players. You can get players in and out. You have bigger squads. Also, just generally, fundamentally less travel. You can get from London. You can literally get from London to Amsterdam on a 4-hour train. The only place you can get on a 4-hour train from New York is DC. Like,
yeah.
It's just like a lot when we think about load management on the league. And I would also not be surprised if this is going to be a factor also. I would not be surprised if when renegotiating their CBA, if the players put in like a thing or something about the amount of extra time that's put in. Because like at this point, it's like literally ridiculous. Like for the Spirit, like the Spirit first half, 13 minutes, I was like, for what? 13 minutes, yeah. For what? Like on a game?
We were in the press box taking bets on like how, and I won, by the way. I know, but yeah,
I saw Jason tweet
that. It was very, very frustrating. And yeah, I think like you said as well, like stopping the game for 5, 6, 7 minutes to issue a yellow card, yo, that's not what VAR is for.
That's not it.
Like we got to get back to the actual like what it's there for. And what it was there for was clear and obvious. Can we get back to that? And if there's a red card and somebody spotted, then okay, cool. Then y'all say, is it a red card or not? But don't go back, stare at it for all that and just be like, never mind, it's just a yellow.
Right. Nah, I'm sorry. Well, because that's like, also that's what you sent the ref over for. You sent them over to evaluate a potential red card challenge. Right. And also the worst part is half the time with these VAR decisions, they're still making the wrong call.
They're making the wrong calls. And sometimes even though camera quality has improved across multiple broadcasts, there still aren't enough cameras because there are some times where I don't have the right lines.
I wonder about that because when at the Spirit, for example, for that red card, they only showed one angle. But I know that the Spirit, like Audi Field, has multiple angles for a goal that was called off on Neely Martin, which I think was wrongly called off because it hit her sleeve. But that's a conversation. Not right now. But I was like, I know that these fields have other angles because you can see them cut. The thing is like, you can see them cutting on broadcast. And so I'm like, are they showing us something different than the ref is seeing right now? Or is it that they're also not showing the ref all the angles? But yeah, it's just like this.
I mean, I hope it's not the latter because if they have the angles that are showing them, well, that's just real silly.
There are also sometimes where we're like, everyone on the TL is like, yes, this is textbook. And it's like, nope. And it's like, uh-huh. It's like the thing. Like, I'm so curious about the disciplinary report that might come out or if the disciplinary committee decides to, like, maybe redo some of these calls because some of them I'm like, I can't explain to you how that's not a red card because also, like, the VAR of last season would have given that as a red card, but the VAR of this season isn't, so... It's still just, it's a little frustrating. I will say so myself. I'm just like, why? For me, I'm like, why is it taking you 3 minutes to tell them to go to the monitor? Is it because you guys don't have time to pull up the plays? Well, like, what's taking so long? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. All right. And on that note, we are going to keep seeing, hopefully there's some changes because referees can make adjustments. They can change things. I think they very much overcorrected and now they need to fix it because this has not been okay. And hopefully that is being said. And hopefully they can do that without needing a CBA intervention because that would just, one, take too long to get to. Like, this is something you can fix right now, like in a meeting. Like, you know, like this meeting could have been an email. Like, they could just take care of this real quick. So, yeah, hopefully that's the case. But, Courtney, we're going to get out of here. We'll have to do Heated and Hyped another time because we
Can we just shout out women's basketball a little bit? I feel like we are collective Heated with VAR and our collective hype. Is
12.3 million for Iowa LSU.
Two of my tweets yesterday kind of went viral. One of them was about Caitlin Clark. It wasn't an original idea. I was like, why is it? I've tweeted this so many times before. Please leave. Let me tweet in the abyss. If you know anything about me, I just enjoy tweeting into the abyss and having no one see them. But that related to that 12.3 number, I was like, wow, we as a collective, really bullied these broadcast companies into making money because we were like, we want to see women's sports, make them accessible. That's crazy. That's actually crazy. What do you mean? We had to bully you to do this? that's crazy. But those games reminded me why I love college basketball, but also why college basketball fundamentally gives me pain. But it also reminded me why I absolutely love college basketball, because I want someone to write something about why we love three-pointers so much. Because the visceral reaction I have when a three-pointer is going in versus any other basketballing activity is like night and day. Like, I'm like, oh my God, yeah. Oh, that's an important point. Or like, yes. But like a three-pointer goes in and I like go ape shit. Especially if someone gets hot from three, not to mention Anne Hathaway, but like if any player gets hot from three, I like collectively lose it.
For me, it's the heat check three. That's the one that makes me really happy. Like when a player hits like two or three threes in a row and they're like really feeling it, and then they just do the absurd pull up. They don't even get anywhere close to the 3-point line. They're just like heat check and just jack it up. If that one goes in, I'm like, hell yeah. Like we got something right now. Like this is going to be fun as hell. And Caitlin Clark definitely does that. So like,
I go absolutely feral.
I was like, okay, so I'm on Twitter. This just popped up, which is good timing. But I'm seeing a Twitter account called TV Sports Updates, which hopefully this is legit. I trust the person who retweeted this into my timeline. Okay. They're followed by Erica Ayala, so I'm feeling better about them.
Shout out to Erica
as well.
For a great question.
Oh yeah, shout out to her, because that response that you heard that hit the timeline from Angel Reese, that was a response from Erica's question. So shout out to her. This is why diverse media is important. Okay.
Period.
This is just for reference. LSU Iowa outdrew. Here are three things that outdrew: every NBA game from last season except Game 5 of the NBA Finals.
Period.
Every college football game last season outside of the college football playoff, OSU and Michigan, and the SEC championship. So, of course, basically three games. And then every MLB game last season. Every single one. Every single one. And
I mean, do I really blame them for that? MLB's baseball be boring.
It does, but think about this. A dude just signed a $700 billion contract, so every time they try to say ratings are related to how much you can get paid, how much your salary should be, no. MLB out here giving people $700 million contracts and got, like, every single game, World Series or not, every single game got outdrew by LSU Iowa. Again, the link ain't what y'all think it is. You just think you understand this shit and you really don't. Not y'all. I'm not talking about the listeners, but the dudes who Ian mentions talk about some bullshit. We know they're dumb, but like this right here is like perfect example. And yes, the Dodgers get the RSN, the Regional Sports Network's money and all that business don't matter. The ratings, they're not rating enough to be paying one person $700 million, and yet they are.
Yeah, I will also say that we know, actually this was just for hair care products, so it's probably more for other things, that the spending power of Black women in America is like $1 trillion or something when it comes to like hair care products and stuff.
Yeah.
And women's basketball is chock full of Black women, and Black women are watching. And so I'm like, it's also like, if you build it, they will come. Like, it's that simple. And I also want to give a shout out to Sedona Prince for that TikTok that went viral like 3 years ago. Do you remember that? And it was like men's March Madness, and it was like the fanciest gym you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And then women's March Madness was like literally like a mat and a set of free weights.
That was outrageous. But it was important to show the discrepancy. And that was the unfortunate thing, is that people just needed to see it. But it's like, or you could just like, you know, listen to and believe women.
Right.
You could just do that.
I mean, yeah, that's a good tenet to live your life by. Many don't, but it's a good tenet to live your life by. But yeah, if you build it, they will come. And those games have been nothing short of fantastic. They've all been so good. And I'm like, this is fundamentally what you could get if you just put them on TV and make it accessible. Fox, for example, has broken like 8 or 9 different viewing records when they put on Iowa games. Like, it's insane. It's just like, build it and they will come.
And all I'm going to say is, everybody watching, keep that same energy for the WNBA. Because if you want to see Caitlin Clark, if you want to see the best ballers in the world, you're going to have to watch the WNBA, because that's where they at. And they're, again, the people that think Caitlin Clark's going to jump in the WNBA and immediately like set it on fire, y'all are going to be real sad, because there's some absolute ballers, some absolute, like, just some... some players in that WNBA that are super talented and also ain't gonna let that happen.
Look, so WNBA is filled by grown women.
Level. Yes, this is correct. This is a grown woman's league. You are absolutely gonna have to take her game to another level, and I think she can. But if you're looking to be like, oh yeah, she's gonna be dropping 30 and 40 in the WNBA, like the best thing that's ever gonna happen to WNBA is Caitlin Clark, I'm sorry, you have not been paying attention to the WNBA. Like, it's gonna be rough for her at the beginning.
It's gonna be the greatest thing that's happened to the Indiana Fever. They're gonna constantly have filled stadiums and stuff.
Correct.
Because people go feral over her. But yeah, the WNBA is a league filled of grown people.
Yeah, correct.
Grown people. Also, Sabrina Ionescu, I saw you at the Bay FC game.
I was going to say, why you bring her up?
Why didn't you go to Gotham, babes? Why didn't you go to Gotham, babes?
Oh, all right. Now we just airing grievances?
All right. A little bit. It was related.
You're just airing grievances right now?
I saw that, and I was like, excuse me, Gotham, you don't want to light the torch? You could have brought the WNBA torchbearers with you, and they could have had a performance with Elliot the Elephant, which I missed, and I knew that happened again. Anyway.
On that note, thanks y'all for listening. We'll be back at some point. We'll actually see, because I'm going to be traveling next week. I got a work conference next week, so we'll figure
it
out.
I've recorded on the road before. The U.S. National Team plays.
We'll see. Huh?
We'll be back after the U.S. Women's National Team plays.
Are we going to drop an emergency episode?
Are just our normal recaps. I know we stopped doing them, but we should start doing them again.
All right. Well, I mean, that'd be nice. All right. Well, we'll talk to y'all soon. All right. Courtney, do the thing.
Bye.
Wow. That's all you got.
ASMR.
Wow. All right. And goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.